this man? What was it? Others looked at radio and saw a gadget.
Walter M. Sterling
looked at radio and saw a household possession capable of enriching the lives of millions.
Good evening, Walter M. Sterling. And coming up tonight, you and I are going to talk about the anger on college campuses about something completely different, and the horror of my engine light blinking, flashing, and you won't believe what's happening on the toll roads today. All of this and you. Welcome to Sterling on Sunday with Dr. Dave Iser.
Sterling on Sunday, tonight.
This is Muskegon, Michigan's own Velo Hool Strip Club. Arrest, police officer, fake details. Later, strippers on the loose, Sterling at night.
Hi, I'm retired New York City Police Detective Vic Ferrari. And on this week's episode of Confessions of a Retired NYPD Detective, I talk about the frigid working relationship between the New York City Police Department and the news media. And if you're not careful, it can end a career. Coming up in moments on Sterling on Sunday.
This is Velo Hula, Muskegon, Michigan. Retired cop. Arrested. Walmart. Details later. People of Walmart. Sterling at night.
Dan and Becky Gaffney here tonight. Cool weather has arrived, and so have the mice.
They're really cute, but they just can't stay.
Tonight on Sterling on Sunday.
Tonight, and you on the toll-free 888-688-WALT.
Samuel Smith, strip club patron. On a wonderful jiggle joint located on Ralph David Abernathy Boulevard in Atlanta. This good man was just pounding down some Moscow mules while watching the ladies dance away. Got a little out of control, so strip club security shows up, including a fellow that was an off-duty officer for Homeland Security, of all things. Placed Samuel Smith in handcuffs for whatever reason. His wife shows up at the strip club. No word on whether she was there or just showed up to pick him up at the appointed time. So Samuel Smith arrested. And the police go and they arrest the arresting officer, because the arresting officer, 49-year-old Terrence Jack, yeah, Terry Jack, no relation to the Seasons in the Sun singer, who was not even an American, the guy's a Canuck, was playing police officer. Terrence Jack's not a cop at all. He goes to jail. The guy he handcuffed? Well, no innocent dove either. He's going to jail too, because he apparently had outstanding warrants in Fulton County, Georgia. Generally speaking, strip clubs probably should go out and pay attention to who their security is. And if you go to a strip club, keep on your P's and Q's, especially if you have a warrant against you. From the Champagne Room, this is Strippers on the Loose. I'm Velo Hool, Sterling at night.
All right, good evening, Walter M. Sterling. Sterling on Sunday. This is a live network show. We're coast to coast. It is the only live network show available at any time over the weekend, because every other show that you're listening to was pre-recorded on Thursday. And whoever did it right now is taking them down at Ruby Tuesdays, taking them down as fast as they can at Ruby Tuesdays. But this is a live radio show, and that means you and I can talk. Some lame program director said to me, and I'm haunted by this because, frankly, it was said to me quite a while ago, well, look, why do you do weather, national weather? You have a national show. Why do you do weather? There's a very simple reason. I've never explained this in detail, but I'm going to take, 43 seconds to explain it in detail. You ready? Here's why I do weather. I did a Google search of trends. Now, you know, if you go to Google Trends, you can see what you are searching the most at any given moment. Now, an hour ago, 3 days ago, and at any given part of the world. What are the French looking for most? Besides where to take off their tops, what are the French looking at? You and I can look and see exactly what our friends and neighbors, by zip code, by town, by what is trending. And you can compare different things. So I typed in four different elements: weather, Jesus, Trump, Biden. I typed in those four things to see how they would trend. And Biden flatlined. Trump flatlined. Jesus, a little better. Weather, pow, through the roof. That line was spiking up there like crazy. And I did it different ways, different parts of the country, different times of day. Weather always wins. Weather always wins. But gosh darn it, my colleagues are determined for the rest of their lives to scream at the Democrats. Now, I'm in an industry. I rarely talk to you about this, but every now and then we have to vent about work. I'm in an industry obsessed with ratings and obsessed with copying. There's nothing more terrifying. Nothing more terrifying. Than trying to give a radio executive a new idea. Because if I were to go to a radio executive and say, here's a new idea, we should really try this, they'd go, yeah, that's really interesting. Who else is doing it? Where else is it being done? That's the response to a creative new idea, good or bad. If it's new, it's like, who else is doing it? Where else is it being done? They should just put that sign, a wooden sign carved that says behind them, over their shoulder, who else is doing it? Where else is it being done? Now, if I were to go to a TV producer, an executive producer, hotshot TV producer, and say, hey, I've got an idea, they might say, you know, that's a really good idea. But, you know, 6 months ago, I saw a pilot for an idea like that. We really can't touch it. Somebody else is doing it. We can't touch it. It's already being done. If I were to go to a Broadway producer and say, oh, I've got this great idea for a Broadway show. Here's the cast, the idea, the plot, the singing. They'd go, oh, I love that idea and I love that cast, but we can't do it. It's already on the road. It's being tested on the road. It's already being done. But go to a radio executive and say, I have a great new hot idea. They will say, who else is doing it? Where else is it being done? Oh, my God. When I said, we need to do weather. It's like, whoa, national show. You can't do weather. Okay. Now, here's the thing. It's such a challenge to get a new idea on the radio. It's such a challenge that most people just give up. But I'm so dumb, I never give up. I'm always presenting new ideas. I'm always trying to think of new ways to do things. And may I suggest to you that if you are in a career where it's difficult to get new ideas done, stick to it. Because you really want to think back to when, think ahead to when you have grandchildren, when you have a legacy to consider. Do you really want to say, well, you know, I copied those ideas better than anybody else in my industry. I made the best hamburger buns that were identical to Pepperidge Farm's hamburger buns. They're identical. Or do you want to say, well, I tried new things. Kids, I did this innovation. I tried this. It didn't work, but who cares? At least I tried new things, because what else is the point? What is the point of copying? There's no point in copying, because what's the only truth about a copy? It is less good than the original. Best copy machine in the world, it's still less good than the original. In art, counterfeits. There's a whole team of counterfeit experts that can spot that one little line that's wrong. It's just not as good as the original. I am horrified by some of the news I've got about the tolls. As you and I know, there should be no tolls. All those roads were paid for within years of them being built. The scam to build more road, I'm going to share with you. You won't believe the Jersey Turnpike scam. It never stops. Good evening. I'm Walter M. Sterling. Welcome. This is Sterling on Sunday.
This one's warmer than an apple pie. I'll be right back. Nick, I screwed up big time at my barbecue.
Uh-oh, you must have forgot the brats.
Worse, I served warm beer.
Oh, wow, you better get back immediately. See you next time.
Crisis averted. The beer will be cold by the time the grill is hot. I knew I should have gotten a new propane tank. Guys, I'll be right back. Maybe place some bags or something. It's right in the shed. Just move the riding lawnmower and they're right there.
Are we being punked?
Uh-oh.
I don't want to talk about it.
I understand. We'll see you in 10 minutes. Just kidding. We'll see you next time.
Back in business. How many people? 1, 2, 3, 10. Perfect. Yeah, except we only have 8 buns. I swear this is my last trip today. All we have left is pie, and it is cut and ready to go.
But did you remember the ice cream?
Nick, you're a genius. I'll be right back.
888-688-WALT, 888-688-9258, Walter Sterling. On a beautiful fall night across America, throughout the country, this is one of those special weeks where the temperature is pretty much the same in every great city in our country. I did Parents Weekend this past weekend at two different colleges. I have an 18-year-old and a 20-year-old, and we did Parents Weekend. And, you know, when I was in school, most kids were, like, really angry and protesting and about to protest and thinking about protesting. And there was this layer of anger that great radio stations and TV shows and news stories could tap into and elicit a big emotional response. And now when I go to the cafeteria at my 18-year-old at SUNY Purchase, State University of New York in Purchase, New York, in the cafeteria, there are protest signs on the walls of every face of the cafeteria, facing every part of the cafeteria. These big signs, little signs, displays in front of the food. You ready? And want to know what the protest signs say? Protest gluten. No sugar. Low carbs. No whole milk. Yeah, no whole milk. That's it. That's the spirit. There's no whole milk. There's no whole milk yogurt, cottage cheese, or milk in the college cafeteria because the student body voted and decided that there will be no whole milk products in any of these, and no gluten, and no sugar. I'm sitting there looking at an apple, but not a very sweet apple, and that's it. That is it for the anger. There is no other anger. And the same thing was true at Syracuse University. No gluten, no sugar. That's the point of protest. There were no other protests. And you and I have talked about the fact that when I go to the elementary school and the middle school and go into the classroom, I am horrified to walk in with parents who say the following. Wow, it looks exactly the same as it did when I was in school. The classroom looks exactly the same as it did when I was in school. And I'm like, it shouldn't look anything like the way it was when you were in school because you're near death. These classrooms should look entirely different. Most parents went to school before there was internet. Right there, it should be different. If you and I say to a 17-year-old today, well, you know, at the bottom of the hour, we're going to do this. Or coming up at the top of the hour, they have no idea what you're talking about because they only know digital clocks. They don't know an analog clock. One of my kids cannot read an analog clock, has never learned to, has never needed to, because you see, her iPhone is digital. Her classroom is mostly digital. There's one sad little analog clock over there. Whatever she's got on her wrist is digital. That's the time. That's how they tell the time. It's not good or bad. It just is. But there's no top of the hour or bottom of the hour. And I was bemoaning the fact that there has not been an evolution in technology in public school classrooms, that the World's Fair has not entered the classroom yet. The big promise of the World's Fair was what? Technology would save time, would give us the ability to spend more time at home. Well, it turned out a virus gave us the ability to spend more time at home. Technology did not. It's going to save tons of paper. Now we have to buy all that paper for the printer. Hasn't saved any time. And worse, the state labor laws have not adjusted for it. It's entirely possible that in many industries, technology has saved all that labor time, that it is not necessary to work a 40-hour week. I know some very smart business owners, like my brother, who owns a business, very successful, mints money. Employee comes in wanting a job, says, you know, and I'll work 12 hours a day. I'll come in here at 5 o'clock. I won't leave till the work's done. My brother will look at this person and go, well, then you won't be very happy here because I pretty much work a 4-day week and I leave at 2 or 3 because no job should take 40 hours a week. That is how he feels. No thought leader job, no thinking job, advertising, finance, radio, no thought job should take 40 hours a week. but all the state labor laws throughout the country, and every state defines a full-time job a little differently. Some of them are 41 hours, some of them 44, some of them 35, but they define a full-time job for the employee. The employer may have all sorts of creative and clever ideas about when they want their person to work, but then when it smacks up against state benefits and state labor laws about what a full-time job is and tax laws about what a full-time job is, no employer really has any control over the definition of a full-time job, a part-time job, and therefore cannot deploy whatever new technology and techniques may be in their field that could redefine going to work, that could redefine what a full-time job is. But there has been a revolution in the classrooms. There has been a technology revolution in the classrooms that is little noted. You ready? Some schools are taking safety into their own hands with bulletproof backpacks, easy to exit windows, and whiteboard safe rooms to protect children from the rise in mass shootings. There was a mass shooting on Friday outside of Cleveland. There are mass shootings almost every week. And now the big technology advancement, not internet, not different ways to teach. No, tragically, the big technology evolution is that there are now safe rooms behind those whiteboards in some schools. There are schools that are putting a gun into every classroom and teaching the teacher how to shoot it and get the teacher a license to hold it. And there are bulletproof backpacks and windows that you and I can just jump out of easily if being attacked. That is the big new line item on school budgets throughout our country. Big new line item. But I believe the solution is a whole lot easier. To me, the solution is, in order to get on a crappy Spirit airline flight, I have to go through a metal detector. How about protecting my kids with a metal detector? Why is that such a big deal? And a uniform cop in every school who would love to have the overtime and somebody you and I can trust and could spot trouble in 2 seconds and stop it just by standing there. Metal detector, cop standing in the doorway. I believe that would solve most of the problem and make kids feel safe. Coming up, you and I are going to talk about the horror show in Israel in just seconds from hopefully a very different perspective and different points of view. There is no other side. If you're anticipating another side to the horror show in Israel, it isn't going to happen here. There is only one side. There is only one right side. There is only one point of view that matters, and that's the point of view of people sitting innocently in their kitchens and seeing a bomb drop on their garage and seeing uniformed people coming into their kids' bedroom and taking those kids. And that's what you and I will talk about coming up in just seconds. I'm Walter M. Sterling. Good evening. This is Sterling on Sunday. Coming up in just seconds, you and I are going to share our feelings about the situation in Israel from a very different point of view. That's in seconds. But first, Dr. Dave Iser and weather.
Sterling on Sunday, tonight.
Hi, I'm retired New York City Police Detective Vic Ferrari. And on this week's episode of Confessions of a Retired NYPD Detective, I talk about the frigid working relationship between the New York City Police Department and the news media. And if you're not careful, it can end a career. Coming up in moments on Sterling on Sunday.
This is Vila Hula, Muskegon, Michigan. Retired cop. Arrested. Walmart. Details later. People of Walmart, Sterling at night.
Dan and Becky Gaffney here tonight. Cool weather has arrived, and so have the mice.
They're really cute, but they just can't stay.
Tonight on Sterling on Sunday.
Tonight, and you on the toll-free 888-688-WALT.
We arrived here with the Army a few hours ago, and on the road in, we went past the area where that music festival was, where 260 innocent Israelis were mowed down. You could smell the stench of death in the air on the drive. And as we got closer to this kibbutz, where so many families were slaughtered in their homes, it became obvious that we didn't even have a full grasp of what took place here. When you turn into the kibbutz, the army has taken back over control of this entire area. There are no longer militants here, but they say just 12 hours ago, they were in gun battles in this area. There is a large pile of bodies stacked up outside of the kibbutz. These are the bodies of militants that they've collected. Around the back of this house, down the street a little bit, we saw about 8 bodies in body bags of the local residents who were here. Some may be militants. They still have to work to identify the bodies. Some are hard to identify. I want to just tell you what the commanding officer told me when we got here. He saw many of the families that were slaughtered in their beds and in their bomb shelters after Hamas militants broke through the door. He told us that there were people who were decapitated here, people with their hands tied behind their backs and shot, executed. It is the most horrific thing I have ever seen. It is a community where there are breakfast plates out with food still on them. On dining room tables, there are refrigerators like you would see anywhere in the world with pictures of little kids playing sports. There are bicycles and still ceiling fans going inside the house. And there are beds soaked with blood, the floor of that kitchen, as you saw, and there are weapons laying everywhere from those militants. You can see some of their vehicles just outside. It is a house of horror behind me, and the entire neighborhood looks like this. To give you a quick number about how many people live here, there are 1,000 residents that were living in Kibbutz Be'eri before this horrific terror attack on Saturday morning. More than 100 of them were killed. Many children among the dead, and their pictures are still on the refrigerator in the house.
Trey Youngest of Fox News in Israel with that stunning, horrible report. You and I are with Gary Arnell. Gary Arnell is a good friend of the show. He is a skilled, successful, top 5 city talk show host. And I want to share why, from my perspective, why there is no other side to the situation in Israel, why Israel is right and Hamas is wrong, why it's just all wrong. This is a religious war. It is not a geopolitical war. It is not a policy war. It's not an ideological war or a geographical war. It is a religious war that has gone on for over 2,000 years in many different forms. But that's what it is. It is a religious war between the 3 major religions of the world. When you and I learned about the Holocaust in World War II, the slaughter, the murder of the Jews of Germany and Eastern Europe and Central Europe and Western Europe and France. France, what are you talking about? Oh, yeah, the French government decided that, yeah, we'll send our Jews into the Hitler ovens. We will take our Jews from France and send them to the Hitler ovens. When you and I have learned about the Holocaust, no matter how much you learned, no matter when you learned it, the fact is that it is incomprehensible. There is so much and so many levels of horror about that Holocaust that you and I do not absorb it all. We cannot remember it all. We have to protect our minds from absorbing and realizing every detail of the Holocaust. Therefore, I have remembered one image that to me epitomizes the horror of the Holocaust. And it may not be the most horrible thing to you. It may not be the most horrible thing to another person. You may not have even seen it or realized it. But this one picture haunts me because to me it summarizes, it encapsulates the entire horror. The death trains that took Jews from their homes to their death, that often would take days in suffocating cattle cars, no food, no water, no air, most people died in those trains. They died before they got to the concentration camps. But there was one image of the train that haunts me. It wasn't all cattle cars. You and I on trains, those long freight trains, have seen coal cars. And coal cars are open cars with no roofs and about a 4-foot-high side. And they pour coal into them, and that's how they haul coal. They don't haul coal in a covered car or a screened car. It's just an open flatbed car with sides that are about 4 feet high. That's it. The Nazis put Jews in those cars to stand in January and February in Germany. And those trains took those Jews in open cars with no roofs, no sides, in February for days. No water, no bathrooms, no food. They had to stand in those coal cars. There's and that image to me represents layer upon layer upon layer of sadism, Satan, the devil. There's another part about the cars, the death trains, that very few people know. And when I tell you, you're going to go, it can't be, as if that wasn't enough. The Jews getting on those trains had to pay for a ticket. They had to pay for that transportation with their last few bucks that hadn't been stolen from them. $6 for an adult, $3 for a kid. Toddlers got on for free. That is why there is no other side. There is no other side. The persecution of the Jews has gone on for over 2,000 years. There is no other side. Gary Arnell, when you look at the tragedy, the horror taking place in Israel right now, what strikes you most? What makes you go, whoa, that is the worst part of this?
Well, let me, Walter, I'm just listening to your description of this, and I'm sitting here, and I'm just shaking, and I've heard this. I've been with this story since it unfolded. And I'm sitting here shaking my head horizontally. And, you know, my first reaction is I have people come up to me and they say to me, oh, Arnell, you're a Jew. This must really hurt. And my reaction to that, Walter, is if you're a human being, it should really hurt. All right? I had grandparents that were interred in... grandparents and relatives of theirs that were interred in Auschwitz. They never made it out, their friends. And I'm sitting here and I'm thinking, never again. Well, again has occurred and did occur last Saturday, beginning with that music festival. And let me tell you, Walter, how this affects me today. Yes, I am a Jew. We are going to be flying to Florida to visit family and friends in about another week or so. My daughter, Jamie, has been wearing a Star of David, Walter, probably for 15 years. She considers it near and dear to her heart and what the symbolism of that star represents to her as far as Judaism and that religion is concerned. I cannot tell you, and this is what, when you say there's no two sides to this, I cannot tell you the anguish and the frustration. I'm getting a chill as I'm describing this. The anguish and the frustration of myself and my wife telling Jamie yesterday, you've got to take that Star of David off when we board this plane. Well, can I just tuck it on the inside of my blouse? No, that's not the world in which we live in today. You've got to remove it, but then I'll feel like something unlucky is going to happen. And Walter, we are living, when you talk about the Holocaust and you talk about the horror that took place at this music festival and the decapitation of these babies. And then you talk, and what really, you know, you talk about what was my reaction. That was my immediate reaction. My second reaction to this was what happened with the intelligence in both Israel and in the United States, because you're dealing, Walter, with Mossad, which is among the best in the spying world. They have an annual budget of about $3 billion, 7,000 staff, second largest espionage agency in the Western world after the CIA. Now, you've got to remember, too, that Hamas, some of this training took place about a mile and a half outside of the Israeli-Gaza border. And so you begin to ask yourself, and this has been going on for months, this was one of my immediate, besides the personal reaction of being a Jew and B, being a human, a caring person who cares about other individuals and other faiths and other religions. And I'm sitting here thinking, how did this happen? I look at the litany of the wars that Israel has won, beginning with its inception in 48, when it was attacked immediately just a couple of months after that. Then the Six-Day War, Yom Kippur, the Intifadas, and now where we are with this war with Hamas. And we're going to be analyzing, you know, was it a communications failure? The United States gets most of its intelligence actually from the Middle Eastern part of the world, from Israel itself. So something went awry here. But I've got to tell you, Walter, and people are starting to talk, you know, politics. Was Biden to blame? Was Netanyahu to blame? Who's to blame for this politically? What happened? There's no House Speaker. How much did that contribute to this? What about Netanyahu's distraction with the Supreme Court, trying to take some of the powers away from the Supreme Court in Israel? I'm ready to stand and debate. You know what I'm thinking about? I'm thinking about that Star of David that my daughter can't wear in 2023 as we're about to board this plane. I want to look into all of those facts. I want to figure and to research and to investigate how in the hell this attack happened against a country that is so prepared, Walter. But now is not the time. Now is the time to remember that there is no two sides to this story.
The way it happened, and you're right, all of that analysis will happen, but the bottom line will be this. Yep. A sadistic group of angry anti-Semites, yep, threw bombs at Jews. This is Sterling on Sunday. Good evening, Walter Sterling with Gary Arnell. You and I are talking about the horror show in Israel. There is no other side. How did it happen? What did Netanyahu do? What did Biden not do? What did Mossad not do? Sorry, none of the above. None of the above had anything to do with it. A bunch of vicious anti-Semites threw bombs at Jews. That's what happened. You could predict it. You could say they should have known they were going to use this type of bomb. Okay, that's all very nice. But that's what happened. A group of anti-Semites threw bombs at Jews. That's what's happened. And in one way or another, that has happened for over 2,000 years. It is a religious war. It's not a geopolitical war. It's not a policy. Not, you know, they're terrible policies. No, no. No, it's much worse. When I was in third grade, it was the first time I ever witnessed anti-Semitism in a way that cut into my heart. My best friend, Charles Wiseman, third grade, we were doing Christmas carols. We were rehearsing Christmas carols in the auditorium, and Miss Fitzgerald, a miserable old lady, a horror show of a woman. Charles he was a straight-A student. The only subject that he stank at was music. And he was struggling with the Christmas carols. And finally, Miss Fitzgerald, meaner than hell, looks at Charles Wiseman and goes, "Don't you know Christmas carols, Charles? Don't you know Christmas carols, Charles?" I was horrified. I was horrified. And, of course, felt terrible. Gary Arnell, let's you and I take phone calls. You want to talk? The number is 888-688-WALT, 888-688-WALT. And that'll be coming up in just seconds. Gary Arnell is one of the great friends of the shows and one of the great talk show hosts of North America, and has shared some powerful thoughts about the situation in Israel. And I look forward for you to talk with Gary coming up in just seconds. This is a live radio show, coast to coast. It is an honor to be with you in the 18-wheeler.
Who was this man? What was it? Others looked at radio and saw a gadget.
Walter M. Sterling.
Looked at radio and saw a household possession capable of enriching the lives of millions.
Broadcast partner and skilled radio host Gary Arnell is sharing our special time together, because it is special. We're only together once a week. Go figure that. That's insane. Gary Arnell is Jewish. His daughter is Jewish. His daughter for years has worn a Star of David visible on the outside of her clothes. They're going on an airplane trip. Parents have told her to hide the Star of David. What would you tell her? My number is 888-688-WALT, 888-688-WALT, Dr. Dave, and the weather.
Sterling on Sunday, tonight.
Hi, I'm retired New York City Police Detective Vic Ferrari. And on this week's episode of Confessions of a Retired NYPD Detective, I talk about the frigid working relationship between the New York City Police Department and the news media. And if you're not careful, it can end a career. Coming up in moments on Sterling on Sunday.
Dan and Becky Gaffney here tonight. Cool weather has arrived, and so have the mice.
They're really cute, but they just can't stay.
Tonight on Sterling on Sunday.
This is Vilo Hula, Muskegon, Michigan. Retired cop. Arrested. Walmart? Details later. People of Walmart. Sterling at night.
Tonight, and you on the toll-free 888-688-WALT.
Good evening. It's about 9 past the hour. Walter M. Sterling with Gary Arnell talking about the horror show taking place in Israel. There's all sorts of analysis. Serious news people, serious newspapers. Well, is it because Israel didn't do something, or because they're geopolitical, or their policy, or because we don't have a Speaker of the House? What? No. All that doesn't matter. This is a religious war that has gone on for over 2,000 years that has enabled the German population to look the other way when millions of their Jewish neighbors were being slaughtered, and they knew it. This has gone on for over 2,000 years. Oh, and the Jews of France were also sent to their death. You know, the sophisticated culture country, France, it happened in France. And now it is happening in Israel, where their neighbors, who are vicious anti-Semites, have decided to throw bombs into the kitchens of their Jewish neighbors. That's what it is. It's nothing else. It is blind, historic rage and hatred of Jews. Now, Gary Arnell, you made an interesting decision. I want you to share again the decision you made about your daughter and her travels and her fashion.
So my daughter, Jamie, has been wearing a Star of David for, I'm thinking, around 10 years or so. And she was bat mitzvahed and went to Hebrew school and all of that. And we're taking a trip to Florida in about another week and a half or something. And my wife, Mona, and I both decided that Jamie should not wear this Star of David while we're on the airplane, not feeling that it's safe in the environment in which we reside right now. Now, not being comfortable and taking that opinion or that attitude easily, Walter, because The irony is that, and I've got to just do this as a set aside for a second, when you look at all of the pictures that we're repeatedly seeing in the media, the decapitated babies, the bullet holes, people trying to hide under a car and then being shot wantonly, the power gliders, and then people will come to me when I'm on the air and they'll say, should we be showing America all of these pictures? And my answer to that is yes, we need to see all of this, but yet, and I don't know if this is hypocrisy or not, Walt. The irony is, I'm saying we should see all these pictures, but I'm telling my daughter, hide your star. Hide your star of David. She is giving us some resistance to that.
Well, how old's your daughter? How old's your daughter, Gary?
She is 29.
Right, so it's none of your business. If she wants to wear that, in my opinion, she should be able to.
I'm caring, I'm loving, I'm nurturing. I see the madness that's going on in this world. And you do have a point. I did talk about hypocrisy a second ago, but when we say never again, I'm seeing it happen today, and this is the advice that I have given her. So that's where we're at with it.
Dan in Wisconsin, welcome to Sterling on Sunday at 888-688-WALT. Hi, Dan.
Good evening, Walter. You're welcome for my call. Let me make something clear just right off the bat. I am not picking sides on this skirmish halfway across the globe. And I'm certainly not defending the attackers. But everybody should doubt every single thing that they see on the, quote, news. So, and this keeps on being called an anti-Semitic attack, but really what it is, it's just Islam saying we're going to, you know, attack everything that isn't Islam. This is just the current thing. That's, quote, religion of peace that Islam claims to be is a complete farce. And this is just their current skirmish, and they're going to keep it up. Again, by no means am I defending them at all, but there is always two sides to the story. I'm not saying they're right at all, but there's always two sides to every story. They're
Dan,
wicked.
Can I, Dan? It's Gary Arnell. I just want to interject something that you said earlier in this call. Really has stuck with me, and I don't think it's going to leave for a couple of hours. When you said, well, all of the media out there, the next thing that I was expecting to hear from you was the fake media, the fake coverage of this, because you don't know what to believe. So do you have, Dan, any doubt in your mind, are there mitigating factors as to whether or not the pictures that we saw, the decapitations, the bullet holes, the putting these women on the hoods of cars that are half dead or dead that had just been raped, people that were slaughtered in the safe houses, do you think this is simply theater of the mind, maybe fake news, maybe we shouldn't be believing what we're seeing immediately? Because that's what struck me immediately out of this conversation. Go ahead.
I think there are atrocious things happening over there, and I'm not saying everything we're being shown is accurate. Let me rephrase that. The media is only in the business anymore to sensationalize, exaggerate, and strike fear. And I do doubt. So there's something terrible happening over there for sure. And I also should say, I certainly don't watch much of it, but I certainly hear about a decent amount of it. If you're alive in this world, you're going to. There are horrible things happening over there for damn sure. And I can't say it strongly enough. I am not defending the attackers. You know, whatever skirmish or scandal, not scandal, but disagreement is going on over there. This is not the answer.
Well,
killing
Dan,
people.
Dan, no, this is not the answer. And thank you very much for your call at 888-688-9258, 888-688-9258. My friend Gary Arnell has told his adult daughter not to wear her Star of David when they travel on an airplane this week to Florida.
Yeah.
That's his opinion. And I think he's wrong. I think that's when fear sets in. But more importantly, I don't think it's any of my business or his, because she's a grown-up. This is Sterling on Sunday. She has worn a Star of David on her clothes for much of her life,
And mommy and daddy are advising adult daughter to not wear the Star of David when they travel. What did your daughter say to that, Gary?
She was taken aback by it. She is not ready to agree to that at this moment. She cherishes that Star of David and everything that it symbolizes as far as Judaism, the role of Judaism in her life. Listen, we're just your middle of the road Jews. Before somebody thinks this is a fanatical Jewish family, Arnell, you know, is proselytizing on all of these topics surrounding this absolutely horrible event that took place from Hamas. Now, I'm worried about my daughter, and I'm worried about her safety. I'm listening to Christopher Wray, the FBI, Jake Sullivan, national security, heightened security around the country. I go through my own neighborhood here, and I see cops sitting outside of the schools. I know what happened to my grandparents during the Holocaust, and I just want her to be safe. And she says to me, well, then can I stick the Star of David inside my blouse? And this is hurtful, Walter, because it's almost a comment on the failure of where we should be as a world, as a society in 2023. And I have to tell her, don't stick that Star of David behind the blouse, because these insane individuals will be looking. Take it off. She tells me, I will feel that I will be losing some kind of protection if I take the star off. And that's where we're at right now. It's a face-off, a standoff at this particular moment.
What do you think? 888-688-9258 is my phone number. 888-688-92, ready? W-A-L-T. A vanity number for a vain man. Good evening. You and I are talking about the horror show in Israel. And the fact is that this is not about policy or treaties or diplomacy or Trump or Biden. No, no, this is about anti-Semitism that has existed for over 2,000 years and is in the fabric of every country in the world. And the story about your daughter's Star of David and hiding it reminds me of a story about my mother's mother, who was born in Hamburg and was sent here to America for safety. And she was Jewish. And she came to America telling people she was a Lutheran. And when she arrived, she told people she was a Lutheran. And my mother grew up believing that my mother was a Lutheran and told us she was a Lutheran. But these were odd Lutherans because my mother would not go to church. My grandmother would not go to church. My grandmother hated all religions, and this was not a hateful woman. She was a registered maternity nurse, giving life to thousands and thousands of precious babies. This was not a woman who had hate, but she hated religion. She would not admit that she was Jewish. It was taught out of her by her father to keep her safe. She was taught to hide her religion to keep her safe, to the point where I don't think my mother knew that she was Jewish. I don't think she knew she was Jewish. She actually believed she was a Lutheran who never once stepped foot in a Lutheran church. And her kids, I, my brother, and my sister, we were raised as Catholics by our dad. Our dad took us to church. Our dad sent us to catechism. And thank you, Jesus. My father, who went to Catholic schools, learned. I said, what'd you learn? He said, I learned that my kids would never go to Catholic schools. And I was grateful to him ever after. These were not exactly evangelical Catholics. But we were food Jews, and it was, our diet was heavily influenced by the Jewish culture. But my mother thought she was Lutheran. She wasn't Lutheran. She was Jewish. And I have to say, Gary, it's no criticism of you, because my instinct as a father is the same as yours. No, you hide that star and you keep your mouth shut. But I also believe intellectually, taking the fact that it's not my kid, I don't think she should have to hide who she is.
Okay, but then let me ask you this question. Is it wrong of me to even proffer that opinion to her that I think that she would be safer, not demanding, but think that she would be safer if she were to remove that Jewish symbol while we are flying to Florida. Is it wrong for me to even... See, I don't believe that it's wrong for me to even bring it up. I'm getting this sense from you that you are not too happy with me even offering that suggestion to her. Now, tell me if I'm heading down the wrong road here. I don't know.
I'm concerned about you using the SAT word proffer on the radio, just randomly saying an SAT word. I'm disturbed about that. Absolutely not. Of course, as a father, it is our job to instinctively and intellectually keep our children safe. That is our number one job. And sharing that opinion with your adult daughter and giving her that information and that, but that's our job. But then what she does with that, that's her job.
Know what I might ask her to do, Walter?
Mm.
Maybe this will convince her. If you're going to wear the Star of David on the plane, maybe we should sit about 14 rows apart.
Well, now see,
I'd love that, to see how she does
that's your choice, and you have every right as an adult to sit far away from your daughter.
Sit away from me,
and to make her feel paranoid.
Yes.
But think about the sequences of thought.
Yeah.
That tragically led you to that piece of advice. In America today, that is not a piece of advice that should occur to us. I understand why it did, but it shouldn't occur to us in the United States of America. The greatest thing France has done in my lifetime is they made a law this week that I only heard reported once. Do you hear about that law? The law was that it is illegal in France to have a protest, to have a demonstration that is pro-Palestine. It is illegal. And intellectually in the United States, we can't have that. We believe in freedom of speech, but gosh darn it, I agree with the French. And 10,000 people showed up in New York this week that were pro-Palestine. For what? For what reason? What are you pro?
Yeah.
A bunch of anti-Semites throwing bombs at Jews. It's really that simple.
That is really the common denominator here throughout all of this. And also, Walter, people tend to become stereotypical with this when they mention Palestinians. There's a very definitive line of demarcation between the Palestinians and the PLO and the Abbas Palestinians, and then the terrorists and the Hamas group and the Islamic Jihad Palestinians and the Hezbollah Palestinians and all of those individuals, the terrorists who are supported by Iran. So there are a different group of people here. But here's the thing, Walter. I've just got to say this quickly. I cannot believe that I am sitting here in the year 2023 and I'm worried and I'm concerned about the rise of anti-Semitism. I was concerned about this prior to this event that took place between Israel and Gaza. But I am even more concerned about it now. And it's not a comfortable feeling for not only a Jew, but for anybody who has respect for human dignity and life in this country. For Jews, there's another little special place in all of this. But it's just, it is a horrible, horrible feeling to have to live with today.
Gary, if I want to reach you by email, how do I do that?
Yes. You do that by GaryArnell@Yahoo.com, GaryArnell@Yahoo.com. And you can also get me on Facebook and X, it is as known now as at Gary Arnell. And Walter, let's plug the Gary Arnell Show, Saturdays 3 to 5 on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT in my hometown of Philadelphia.
Will you ever actually be on again, or will you be preempted by worthless football games that nobody cares about for the rest of your career?
I mean, I have to tell you, it's a little frustrating. Luckily, they're airing a very, very good football team in Penn State. But when you have all of this stuff unfolding, you go right to social media, and that's the outlet for now. But that's the normal slot, is Saturday afternoons, 3 to 5, Talk Radio 1210, WPHT, where I first met Walter Sterling.
A great honor to have you with me tonight. All right, we've got a big show for you tonight. You and I are going to talk about a town that has sanctioned everybody's garage to be turned into a bar. That's in just seconds. Dr. Dave Iser, your weather.
Sterling on Sunday, tonight.
Dan and Becky Gaffney here tonight. Cool weather has arrived, and so have the mice.
They're really cute, but they just can't stay.
Tonight on Sterling on Sunday.
This is Vila Hula, Muskegon, Michigan. Retired cop. Arrested. Walmart? Details later. People of Walmart. Sterling at night.
Hi, I'm retired New York City Police Detective Vic Ferrari. And on this week's episode of Confessions of a Retired NYPD Detective, I talk about the frigid working relationship between the New York City Police Department and the news media. And if you're not careful, it can end a career. Coming up in moments on Sterling on Sunday.
Tonight, and you on the toll-free 888-688-WALT.
Hi, I'm Dan Gaffney.
And I'm Becky Gaffney.
Every week, we give you tales of our old house and our eight kids. I forget that every time fall arrives and cool weather arrives, the mice start coming into the house.
Okay, we live in a very, very old house with, you know, lots of little places for them to sneak in. And boy, do they.
I heard a couple of the kids yelling some commotion in the kitchen, and I go in. They have a mouse trapped under a glass bowl, clear glass bowl. It was like watching him in an aquarium.
He was very cute. He was so tiny, and we slid a little book under there and lifted him up so I could look at his cute little tiny face and his cute little tiny whiskers.
That one we took to the neighbor's house and let loose.
Unfortunately, it didn't go in there.
Later the same day, they think they caught the same one again?
I'm pretty sure, because he's, like, coming at you. It's like, hi, I'm your little cute, sweet, mousy friend.
I think it's when you see one little one, they have a lot of siblings.
I don't know. I think it was the same one. They think it was the same one. Jasper knows his animals, okay? And I think he would recognize the same little mouse.
Well, it's down with the mouse poison. So here's the kind I buy. It's a little bait station where they crawl in, they eat the yummy food, and then they go off and die.
Okay, and here's the thing. I hate the fact that these poor little creatures can't stay alive, but if they stay alive, they come back in the house. It's like the squirrels in our neighborhood. Things love to come in.
It's awful.
It's terrible. We live in the middle of this city, and all the little creatures come in as soon as it gets cold. They try and get in the house.
Last night, in the middle of the night, Becky here wakes up, and she's having a standoff with a mouse chewing behind the cabinet. You can hear him back there.
I couldn't find him, but I could hear him.
She's throwing shoes at the dresser, shining her cell phone flashlight over there, trying to get this mouse to shut up.
If I opened and shut the drawers a couple of times, it would quiet down. And of course, you know, I think he's sweet little mouse, and I just want him to go away. Just go away so you don't have to die by means of some trap breaking your neck off or some poison. I hate it.
I'm bringing in those spring traps to snap their neck. This calls for drastic measures.
And that's the thing. The thing is, you have to do what you have to do. The little sonic things don't work. I have all the sonic sticks shoved in the ground that make noises to keep the squirrels and the mice away. It doesn't work.
I think it attracts them. I'm going bait station. I'm going peanut butter on the little wooden neck snapper trap. They're going down today.
If I find one that is squealing and alive, and it's this little cute tiny thing, and he's in pain, I'm coming down and snapping your neck, okay?
There's one kind of mouse trap they sell that I refuse to use.
That's the sticky thing?
The glue trap.
Oh, it's awful.
Do you know about the glue trap?
I know about the glue trap.
It's a cardboard disc with ultra-sticky glue on it, and the mouse just runs across it and gets trapped.
Okay.
And then lays there alive.
It's too awful.
And screams.
Stop. I can't even stop. Can you get me a hotel room for a couple of days until the mice are eradicated? I can't do this. They're so cute.
I told you I'm not using the glue trap.
I know, but anything is just awful. They're so sweet.
They're sweeter when they're dead.
888-688-WALT. With the mice and the glue trap, I've always had cats or multiple cats. And when there has been a mouse and a glue trap, more than once I'd come home and, yeah, there'd be a mouse in the glue trap, but there's also be a cat's paw or tail stuck in the glue trap. Therefore, the glue traps are not ideal. What I have found through my life, thinking, oh, well, you know, every now and then I've seen a mouse and it doesn't matter because I have cats. The cats will take care of it. That's never happened.
any cat I've ever had views the mouse as a toy, a really entertaining friend to chase around and scare the poor mouse to death. I don't think I've ever had a cat that killed a mouse. They'll corner them and stare at them for hours, just stare at them and not kill them. I believe the cats have to be taught by a mother cat to kill a mouse. They don't know how to instinctively kill a mouse. They have to be taught. It's a skill. However, the key about mice want what you and I want. They want to be warm. They want food. And as much as they want food, what they look for in our house is nesting material, scraps of paper, dust, anything that they can use for a nest. That's what's as valuable to them as food. And it doesn't take much food. Think about how big they are. They don't need many of our crumbs on the floor. They don't need a lot of it. But I have had no success with any of the traditional ways to get rid of mice, because the way you get rid of them is you have to seal up every entrance. And the entrance that you think is sealed up is just big enough for that mouse to get in. And the cats are going to scare them. No, the cats just play with them. And the mice can be very determined. Good evening. I'm Walter M. Sterling, and the name of this show is Sterling on Sunday, and you and I get to talk to each other. Well, coming up, you and I are going to talk, and when you call in, you'll have an opportunity to guess a mystery voice. This is the mystery voice.
When you land in New York, you're going, and like that's so fun, but there's something about being away and then coming back to L.A., and you're just completely relaxed.
If you can guess the mystery voice, we have a very special prize for you tonight. Are you ready for this? I mean, this is really the Halloween horror prize. You and I will have a meal. You and I will share a meal at a Waffle House. I'll pick the Waffle House. You'll have to get there, but I'll pick up the check. You and I will enjoy a meal at a Waffle House. Now, real serious, hardcore listeners like Keith Mortensen and his 18-wheeler, who has finally retired. And Keith, I liked one of those houses you saw in Florida. Take one on the East Coast. You'll be happier on the East Coast than you will on the West Coast, because on the West Coast, the Gulf of Mexico is like a lake. It's not the ocean effect that you and I like at the Jersey Shore and Wildwood. It's not like that. It's a lake, whereas on the East Coast, it's the ocean. And I like the ocean, not the lake. Hated lakes. I always hated lakes because I couldn't see the bottom. And I believed the bottom was filled with snakes. Anytime my feet would touch the rocks in the bottom of a lake, there was always that awful moss and cover on it. But I assumed it was just thousands of snakes waiting for me at Camp Kanetawapak, the Boy Scout camp, Camp Kanetawapak, where you jumped into the lake and you didn't know how deep it was. You never had any idea. And then there was always like 10 guys who seemed to be twice as big as me who could jump in and swim like an Olympian. No problem. They could swim, didn't care about the dock, weren't afraid of the dock. I was terrified of the ladder at the lock, the dock, terrified of all of that, and mostly terrified of the fact that I could not see the bottom of the lake. Those are the things that scared me. But you and I can have a meal. You and I can share a meal at a Waffle House that I'm happy to pay for. The reason that we didn't do it before, and this is what Keith will remember, we were going to have a broadcast from a Waffle House. I was going to do this show from a Waffle House. Waffle House corporate thought that was a good idea. We were all ready to do it. The reason we didn't do it is Waffle House has a really interesting infrastructure. They do not have Wi-Fi at any Waffle House. No Waffle House has Wi-Fi, which is a genius move on their part, because they don't want to be Starbucks. They don't want me to come to the Waffle House every day at 11:45 and leave at 4:45. They don't want me to live at the Waffle House the way people live at the Starbucks. So they don't have Wi-Fi. And that's why I couldn't do a show from a Waffle House. I was all ready to do the remote. We had all the elaborate preparations necessary for doing a network radio show from a Waffle House. And we couldn't do it because they didn't have Wi-Fi. but you and I can have lunch. But in order for you and I to have lunch at the Waffle House, in order for you and I to enjoy cheese and eggs or waffles, but not pancakes, at the Waffle House, you have to identify this voice. Listen,
when you land in New York,
voice.
You're going, and, like, mm-hmm. that's so fun. But there's something about being away and then coming back to L.A., and you're just completely relaxed.
Even more stunning, you and I will take selfies at the Waffle House. There'll be pictures of us at the Waffle House together. You can prove to your friends that you know a F-level celebrity. Good evening, 47 past the hour. I'm Walter M. Sterling. This is Sterling on Sunday.
You're a dinosaur, Sipowicz.
I'm a dinosaur.
You jeopardize that collar because it sticks in your throat on first grade.
It sticks in my throat, how you got it?
Every white guy in the department with second grade thinks he should have gotten my grade promotion. Half of you guys think I got it on my back.
Hey, Walter. On this week's episode of Confessions of a Retired NYPD Detective, I'd like to talk about the news media and the NYPD's working relationship. When I was in the police academy, we were taught mum was the word. Nothing good could come from talking to a reporter or seeking information. And this is long before cops were making jackasses out of themselves dancing around on TikTok. There wasn't social media, but there was news media. We were taught that if a reporter had a question, we were to politely direct them to Deputy Commissioner of Public Information. Reporters don't trust cops, and cops don't trust reporters, because reporters rarely, if ever, write a favorable story about people in law enforcement. So in the early 80s, I was working in this unit, and there was a summons slowdown. Basically, what happened was the cops were padding their pensions, making a lot of overtime, and the borough sent in a hatchet man, and the hatchet man started transferring, breaking up partnerships and transferring cops at a different precinct. So that what the old timers did was they had a summons slowdown. Now, NYPD members are not allowed to go on strike. A summons slowdown is a different matter. And no matter what the NYPD will release or tell you, there absolutely positively is a summons quota. So you shouldn't take it personally when your sergeant tells you your activity is down during an unsanctioned summons slowdown. They're just the messenger. It's coming from One Police Plaza, which comes from the borough, which gets dumped on your commanding officer. So the guy sent to deliver the message was this 25-year veteran, this old-time sergeant. He used to carry an axe handle instead of a nightstick, veteran of the Harlem riots, very well respected. He came down to talk to us. And he said, listen, basically, there was a summons slowdown. There was summons quota 25 years ago when I was hired. There's a summons quota now, and there'll be a summons quota long after I'm dead. He said, listen, if you guys don't want to write summonses, don't write them. But the commanding officer is going to look into hurt people here. So you do what you want. I'm just delivering the message. And everybody understood that your sergeant isn't getting a commission on the parking tickets you write. So somebody in that room took that statement and called a reporter at one of the major news outlets. And the next thing you know, a couple of days later, there's this long story in the newspaper about how this sergeant is ordering cops to write summonses. And they did correctly point out that there is a summons quota, but the reporter dumped it on this sergeant and misquoted him. So what winds up happening is I get stuck driving the sergeant a couple of days later. And he said, whoever wrote that article ruined my career. And sadly, he retired a couple of days later. They didn't have a retirement party. We had a plaque for him. He never came to pick it up and basically ruined the man's career. So be sure to check out my new book, The NYPD's Flying Circus, Cops, Crime, and Chaos.
The great Vic Ferrari. And I'm sitting here and I'm like, you know, I mentioned France a lot. Now, France today is a highly desirable place to visit. And years ago, I got engaged in Monaco. And the way I got engaged in Monaco is very dramatic. I was walking in the Mediterranean. It was a good foot deep. And I was with my fiance, Katie. And we're walking in the water. And I pretend to, oh my gosh, there's something. I've just stepped on something. My foot hurts. And I pulled up my foot. And with it, I pulled up an engagement ring. And I had a French guy on the beach take a picture of this moment. So we have a photo of the very moment when I asked Katie to marry me 22 years ago. Shockingly, she agreed and has continued to agree. I don't know why. That is the place we want to go back to. That is my fantasy, is to go back to the south of France, to spend like 2 weeks in the south of France and do nothing. The great thing about the south of France is that although it is opulent and wealthy and beautiful, there's something about the people there that don't rub it in. It's not like being on the Upper East Side of New York. It's not like being in Bel Air in California. It's just beautiful. And the weather of the Mediterranean is different than any place else in the world in that the air has this luxurious quality. It has this cushiony, luxurious quality. It's not humid. It's not not humid. It's always 68 to 72 degrees or Celsius. I don't know what Celsius means. I can't even begin to describe it. But as you and I have discussed, it does demonstrate the reason to hate French guys. There's a dramatic reason to hate French guys, best demonstrated in the south of France, which is that you and I, if you and I want to take a woman out and we have a fantasy about getting her top off, that is a month-long process. Many months of begging and getting to know her family and showing respect for her and having a gold American Express card. And then at some point, her top will come off. Meanwhile, if you're a guy in France and you're working next to a woman you find attractive, or you're in college and you're sitting next to a student you find attractive, and you'd like to get her top off, here's what you say. Let's go to the beach. Let's go to the beach. That's all they have to say. And then they go to the beach, and the woman they're with takes off her top. Automatically. No begging involved. I'm not promising you should take out that iPhone. Not sure that should happen right away, but I don't know. It might be totally acceptable in the French culture. I don't know.
Who was this man? What was it? Others looked at radio and saw a gadget.
Walter M. Sterling.
Looked at radio and saw a household possession. Capable of enriching the lives of millions.
Good evening. Coming up, you and I will share the actual reason most men file for divorce. Welcome, Midnight Misfits. It's just you and me. We're alone in the 18-wheeler. We're alone in the car coming back from the vacation weekend. It's just you and me. 14 inches away from the speaker, 14 inches away from the microphone. This is the best medium. Dr. Dave Iser, meteorologist, weather.
This was not some sort of a litmus test on the security of the Walmart in Florida. No, this was a police officer, a retired police chief, in fact, who rolled into the Walmart and figured he'd do the five-finger pickup, and unfortunately, didn't work out so well. Christopher Radz, arrested October 5th at the Walmart in the Villages, of all places, in Florida. A lot of retired people there, 59 years old, and he was placing stuff into the Walmart plastic bag, passing all points of sale, leaving without trying to pay for the items. Now, he was read his Miranda rights and did not wish to speak to the deputy making the arrest, according to the Villages News. Now, rest. Recently retired, reportedly, from the Alsip Police Department in Illinois after serving 32 years. This is the sad thing about this. If you're going to go out and be a retired police officer who's going to go to the bad side of the law, you should learn the tricks of the trade. And obviously, former chief Christopher Raddatz, allegedly, didn't learn how to shoplift properly. He was released on $500 bond. You would have thought he would have learned from the pros. For the people of Walmart, this is Velo Hool, Sterling at night.
There's Karen O. Welcome, my Midnight Misfit. And Catherine A. And Rosemary Furlong, Midnight Misfits. We don't fit in. We are introverts. And the person I know personally who fits in the least is Dave Scott. Dave Scott, UFOlogist. Welcome to Sterling on Sunday. Always fun to talk to Dave about UFO things. Hi, Dave.
Always a pleasure to have you entertaining my listening ears, Walter. Thank you for joining us.
Now, Dave, recently you said some very kind things about this show. You were trapped on hold for too long, which was my fault. And you actually got to hear the show, and you seem to have been entertained. Dave, I need to know for my giant ego why you were entertained by this show.
Now, you may be insulted by what I'm going to say, but I think, Walter, you have very much dry Canadian-type humor. Yeah. I know you don't want to be considered a Canadian. You're a real patriot. You're a real American. You've got your Stars and Stripes boxers on right now. But I'm telling you, my man, you are the man when it comes to Sunday night programming.
Dave Scott, you realize what my competition is on Sunday night. It's the Bitcoin show.
Yeah. Yeah, but you're still amazing. You are still amazing and a real pro, and I love listening to you.
Well, the thing about Canadian radio, because I did a lot of work when I wore a suit and wingtip shoes before I was a host. I worked with a lot of Canadian stations, CFRB in Toronto, CJAD in Montreal. And the thing about Canadian radio, as a group, it's much better than radio in the States. And the reason that I believe it is much better than radio in the States is until very recently, it was owned, like the Mafia, by the five families. Five families owned all those radio stations, except for maybe like the one in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan. I said that. Did you hear that, Dave? I said it's Saskatoon, Saskatchewan. Amazing.
I love
it. American. No other American could ever say that. But the radio stations are there. Thank you. But the radio stations in Canada as a group are better because until very recently, they were owned by the five families. And the head of the five families were all programmers. These were all people who'd been on the air. I mean, Alan Slate had been a newsman at Chum in Toronto. And so they were all on the air. They were all programmers. They had programmers' ears, and they didn't always know how to fix it, but boy, did they know when it was wrong. Not so with most of the CEOs in the United States. Most of the CEOs of radio companies in the United States have one qualification, which is venture capitalists are comfortable with them.
Yes.
Venture capitalists are comfortable with them. What a miserable, horrible career trajectory to know that the goal is to be comfortable with VCs. And what are VCs? They are people who wear $200 ties and sit in math class all day, Dave Scott.
And, you know, they never have a scuff on their shoes. They're the guys reading the newspaper, getting their shoes shined, while the real people are doing the work like you and me, my friend.
They are blinded by the glow from their Guccis.
Very true.
All right, Dave Scott. There's this halo effect around the sun or the moon or something this week. Do you believe that is alien in origin?
No, I think that is natural in origin. And, you know, I had all my friends posting about it this week, and there was a little bit of an eclipse happening, which I'm looking up at the sun, and I'm like, well, it doesn't look any different from my fishing hole. So I was a little taken aback by that. But no, unfortunately, sometimes Mother Nature gives us some absolutely wonderful, spectacular views. And we'll thank Mother Nature for this one instead of the alien grays.
Now, this is the last week we'll discuss this because it's over. But I've been fascinated, as you have, by the United States congressional hearings about UFOs. And all the testimony by angry ex-employees of various government agencies saying, yes, it's real. Yes, they're really here. And what I don't understand, Dave Scott, is it has not reverberated through the universe. It has not hit the level of general conversation. Why do you think that is, Dave?
Well, I think the media has to take a big issue with that. And the reason why is you've dealt with news directors. I've dealt with news directors, and they think they know best. They think that the UFO world is a bunch of tinfoil hat-wearing, minimum wage-earning people who don't have anything else in their lives besides drumming up conspiracy theories. But, you know, the people on the inside, Walter, are very much interested in this, and they are very much wanting to know what's going on. But what I am hearing is because of the situation in Israel with Hamas and the IDF right now, that the UFO talks are being pushed back until potentially 2024. And, you know, you can't blame them for that. You can't, you know, there's a world conflict going on, and And with that world conflict means that other things take precedence over UFOs right now. But we're hoping that Tim Burchett, the congressman who's got a real thumb on this subject, he continues to push towards it while the world is in shambles.
One 24-hour television news network did carry it as a top story, and that was the New News Nation, which is run by Lee Harris, a real newsman, but a populist newsman. And yes. Sean Compton, his boss, the ultimate populist, they understand that, gee, aliens and real alien beings being held by our government, that's probably the biggest news story that will ever hit mankind. Is there other UFO news that you want to cover right now, Dave Scott?
I actually got a beautiful story for you right now. Yes. And it sticks with Israel, okay, and what's happening in the Gaza Strip. Now, a number of days ago, I got tipped off by an insider of mine saying, within 5 days, there is going to be UFO reports coming out of Israel. He goes, you watch. He goes, I'm going to tell you right now, they're not aliens. They are ours. And I watched the timeline, and it wasn't, he was wrong on the date. It wasn't 5 days later. It was 4 days later that all of a sudden UFO reports started coming out of Israel. And I'm absolutely amazed by this because, you know, we don't know the technology that the United States government is hiding at places like Area 51. And just to clarify with your audience, there are no aliens at Area 51. Okay, those, whatever was there at the time in the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s has been moved out. However, the technology that is being displayed there looks very ufological. And some of those people have been moved to the Middle East, and some of those people have been activated. And let's just say I expect more so-called UFO sightings coming out of Israel over the next few weeks.
The great Dave Scott, an expert on all things UFO. Dave, how do we learn more about you?
Always at spacedoutradio.com, Walter, and you're number one on Sunday nights, my man.
Dave Scott on Sterling on Sunday. Good evening. It's about 17 past the hour. I'm Walter M. Sterling, and I'm live. Oh, my God, there's nothing else live at this time. Welcome, Sterling on Sunday.
This is Florida Story. Thank you. Yeah, thank you so much. Let's see what the geniuses in Florida are up to this week, shall we? All right, I want to start with a guy who is 21 years old. He's at a park when the cops show up. He was called the cops because he had been shot. So the cops started asking him a few questions. How did you get shot? He said, well, I was being carjacked by these two guys, and one of them shot me, and then they ran off. And they said, I noticed you have a gun that has been fired in the passenger seat. He said, yes. When they tried to carjack me, I grabbed my gun, and as they were running away, I fired 5 shots at them. And so the cops looked around and they said, well, where's the shell casing for the gun that they fired? And the 21-year-old Florida man said, oh, I saw the shooter pick up his own shell casing. That sounds a little suspicious. So they take him to the hospital to get treated for the gunshot wound to his leg. And the cops are talking to each other. Something doesn't add up. So they go ask him again, you sure you want to tell us the real story? Okay. He wasn't carjacked. He was at the park. And he and his girlfriend got into an argument, and so then he went to his car and got his gun, and he says he was playing with it. I guess, twirling around with it like Doc Holliday or something, and he accidentally shot himself. Well, 21-year-old Florida man, why did you make up this story about being carjacked? Well, because he thought it would be embarrassing, and he would also get in trouble with his employer for playing with a gun in a public park. It turns out he is employed as a dispatcher for the local sheriff's department. And yes, he did lose his job. And his girlfriend. Hold my beer.
Wait, hold my beer.
What? Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
Stay tuned. Part two of Florida Stories is right around the corner. Subscribe to the Florida Stories podcast and get past episodes at waltersterlingshow.com. For Sterling on Sundays, I'm James Parker, and this is Florida Stories.
Well, the number one way that introverts negotiate the world is really interesting. Most introverts believe that they are shy. We are not shy. We are wired differently. And an introvert like me and probably you, because you're listening to the radio now and you don't have a normal life. No normal person listens to the radio now. Are you crazy? We get our energy by being alone. When you and I are with other people, our energy dissipates. We get more and more and more tired the longer we're with other people. And to preserve our energy, we shut down. We don't talk. We don't participate. We don't sit in a focus group. We don't sit in a group think and raise our hands and ask questions and sit in the front row and be all perky. And, oh, I have an idea. I have an idea. That's not us. The way I deal with work situations where we have to solve this, give me the problem. I will go to the back of the cave, chew on my food, and in a day and a half, I will come out of the cave with the answer. I won't come out of the cave with the discussion topics and the bullet points. I will come out with the answer. That's how an introvert works. We're not wrong. We're not sick. We're not disabled. We're not screwed up. It's just we're wired differently. A person who's an extrovert, when they go out into the world and they're in a big sales meeting or they're in some sort of group think, they get bigger. They get more energy. They derive energy from being with other people. And they get no energy from being alone. I get my energy from being alone. There's a difference between being an introvert and being an isolator. An isolator is a person who can't function with other people, can't deal, don't know how to sort out their issues or talk about their problems or get something fixed. They just hide. An isolator is someone who hides and needs help and should be talking about it with people. But an introvert is someone who derives energy and ideas and solutions in solitude. My mistress in my marriage is solitude. When my wife says, all right, I'm going to go out of town for a week, I'm like, yes, yes. It has nothing to do with liking her or not. It has nothing to do with wanting to be with her or not. It's just I need to be alone. I need, because when information comes into my head from other people, I have to like rattle it in my brain and adjust it and readjust my balance and readjust my point of view. Whereas when I'm alone, I'm fine. I have never felt lonely in my life. And for a while, I thought that was a problem. You know, it's so sad. People need to be with other people. I don't. Most of my life, I've spent alone. For years, I worked in an apartment, a nice apartment, but it was my office. It wasn't where I lived. It was my office. That's where I worked, but I was alone. And my secretary was in another building. We had an intercom system, a very complicated system that gave the illusion of me being in an office, but I wasn't in an office. I was alone. That was the only way I could function. That's called an introvert. The way most introverts cope with social situations is you and I capture an extrovert. You and I have a close friend who's an extrovert. And they will lead the charge. They will be in front of the line for us, and we'll be quietly behind them. We seek an extrovert to help us negotiate social situations. Odds are an introvert's going to marry an extrovert, someone who's good with other people and good at getting out there, and everybody seems to like the other person, but they don't like you. Yeah, I really like your wife. Well, my wife's an extrovert. Yeah, I really like your wife. And then it sort of trails off about whether or not they like me because I really have never given them enough to like me. Or I have said something early in the conversation to push them away so that I can control the dynamic with them. And there's an illusion that you and I have any control over anybody else. I don't. If I say, hey, would you give me a pencil? You still have to want to give me the pencil. There's no control between each other unless there's weapons involved. Well, this is a very exciting show. Is there any other show like this? Have you heard anything like this? Do you love the show? I want to hear from you. WalterMSterling@gmail.com. WalterMSterling@gmail.com. Every email I get gets answered because I answer them alone. And I look forward to sharing with you a stunning story about a town that has said, you know, it's okay to open a bar in your garage. I am so proud of this town because it's the town I grew up in. Yes, it's the town I grew up in. And you and I will talk about that in just seconds. This is Sterling on Sunday. Good evening. My hometown has made it okay to open a bar in your garage. In just seconds, Dr. Dave Iser.
Dave, what are you having over there?
There's a lot of thirsty people in Maplewood. There's a trend of building garage bars.
My name is John Garbarino, and I am the owner of The Gar Bar, which is a garage bar at my home. Did you try this? There's not a lot of options in these towns in New Jersey. It sort of fills the void of having a real close, walkable local pub that you would have in New York City.
Because I get spicy?
I'm known for my Bloody Marys. There is no license required. We're not selling anything here. People just kind of walk over. My plans to create a bar in my garage really came from realizing that this really could be a better space than it was where I was dumping all my crap. It's something that my wife has totally bought into because it's become such an important part of how we entertain people around town. Realized that they also had great spaces and they wanted to convert them, and so we've become good friends.
Maplewood, New Jersey is 20 minutes from Midtown Manhattan. It is a suburban town with good solid schools and an excellent park system, and it's where I grew up. It is sort of a definitive upper middle class town. It used to be a middle class town, but now that the homes are $700,000-$800,000, that's an upper middle class home because of its proximity to the train. You can walk from any one of those homes to the train and get into New York City in moments. Well, now these geniuses have decided that what they need to do is take their garages and turn them into bars. Now, you see, in order to sell anything out of it, you'd have to have a liquor license. Well, they're not going to be getting any liquor licenses. And what could be better than being able to drive up to a garage and get booze? Drive up to a bar and get brews. This is the hot trend in Maplewood, New Jersey. People are taking their garages and turning them into bars. And when you go online and you look at this in Maplewood, New Jersey, search Maplewood, New Jersey bars, you will see that these aren't just like card tables put up in the garage. People have set up real bars and arcade and amusements and signs and a lot of beer signs. You know what? You have a sound file called Alex Baseman. Alex Baseman. Why don't you play that right about now? This is how they deal with bars in the basement in Wisconsin.
Hey, got any cold beers? This one's warmer than an apple pie. I'll be right back.
Nick, I screwed up big time at my barbecue.
Uh-oh, you must have forgot the brats.
Worse, I served warm beer.
Oh, wow, you better get back immediately. See you next time.
Crisis averted. The beer will be cold by the time the grill is hot. I knew I should have gotten a new propane tank. Guys, I'll be right back. Maybe play some bags or something.
There's another it's Alex
right
one.
In the
Say
shed. Just
with
move
this,
the
okay?
riding lawnmower in. They're right there.
Are we being punked?
Uh-oh.
I don't want to talk about it.
I understand. We'll see you in 10 minutes. Just kidding. We'll see you next time.
Back in business. How many people?
1, 2, 3, 10.
Perfect. Yeah, except we only have 8 buns.
I swear this is my last trip today. All we have left is pie, and it is cut and ready to go.
But did you remember the ice cream?
Nick, you're a genius. I'll be right back.
Rule number one, every Wisconsin basement has a bar, but not just any bar, a bar that has more brandy than whiskey. It also needs some good photo bombs. Don't forget to have matching beer glasses. And by matching, I mean they're all from breweries. It wouldn't be a Wisconsin basement without beer signs.
And I'm not just talking one or two.
I'm talking like 10. And don't forget your trophy so you can remind people that you don't
always not come home with a deer, and you have to have a pool table just in case someone wants to play once a year. Don't forget about the lovely brown Davenport that's been passed along to at least three generations. And lastly, darts.
The Queen of Wisconsin, Alex Worley. I love Alex. Funny, terrific, and way gorgeous. Coming up in just seconds, you and I are going to discover the major reason why men file for divorce. It's not what I thought. In just seconds, this is Sterling on Sunday.
How do you expect your man to give you princess treatment if you're not treating your man like a king? Like, you don't cook for him, you don't clean for him, and you don't let him fill you up like a Twinkie. Make it make sense.
If you want to be treated like a queen, treat your man like a king. It's really that simple. Example, my man is coming back from a week-long work trip. I'm on my way to the airport right now to pick him up in his truck that I got detailed for him, with also flowers, breakfast, and coffee. It is really that simple. It is the little things that count. On top of loving them, respecting them, sleeping with them, treat your man like a king, you'll get treated like a queen. He'll forever love you. He'll forever respect you. He won't cheat on you.
Men do not file divorce for sex. Men can always find sex even at the end of their arm. But men do not file divorce because they're not having sex. Men do not cheat for sex. Men cheat to be applauded. Men cheat because a woman they like and respect tells them that they are wonderful, brilliant, have outstanding ideas, don't get enough credit, wonderful father, can't believe you take care of your wife that way and she does nothing for you. What you just heard is all that a woman needs to do to have a successful relationship with a man, because men are so simple. When I am told, you know, you're very complicated, I am not complicated. This is my plan. I want to wake up, drink the coffee at my pace, watch last night's shows that I recorded. Today was a great day. Excuse me. I watched three Shark Tanks in a row. To me, that is the height of heaven, while drinking coffee and thinking about what I was going to have for breakfast. And, oh my gosh, I have a show to prepare. That was my morning. I watched three Shark Tanks in a row, and I was completely happy. I didn't have to do anything else. Now, if any member of my family, any of the women, because I have three daughters and a beautiful wife, if any of them had said, what are you going to talk about tonight? Oh, that would have been a high holiday. That would have been a high holy day if any of them had shown any interest in my work. That would have been it. If the women you live with ever say to you, listen, tell me, how do you do that really hard job? How do you bring home the money? I really appreciate it. Have you ever heard that? Because one of the things that men goof at is the following. I help my wife with the stuff in the house. I help her out. No, that isn't how I view it. I don't view helping my wife with the dishes and the laundry. And I just did a spectacular load of towels. I mean, these towels smell great. I have secret methods for doing the towels. No, I view all of that as my job. I'm the husband. I have equal responsibility for everything. Taking care of the kids, going shopping, making dinner, all of that. But the heaven moment is when the bride says, hey, stay in bed. I'll take care of everything. You don't have to get up till you have to go to work. Just stay in bed. I'll take care of the kids. I'll get them out. Don't worry about it. I'll make the breakfast. Gee, we're out of some things. I'll go buy it. I have never heard, in the length of my marriage, I have never heard my wife realize that we have run out of butter and say, oh, we're out of butter. I will have to go get some. I've never heard that. We're out of butter?
Oh, no, I didn't. Did you know we're out of butter?
As in, why didn't I get more butter? I have never heard her say, I will go get the butter. I have never heard her say, I think Samantha, the 11-year-old, would really like X for dinner. I'll make it. Never. I have never heard her say that. Never. At some point between 5 and 6, I will say to Samantha, hey, do you want dinner? And I'll make the dinner. There really are no extenuating circumstances there. My wife could make the dinner. But she doesn't make dinner. She doesn't do food shopping. She hates that. I love to go food shopping. But I don't want to do it every time. And that goes to recognizing what I do, and bride showing appreciation by saying, let me take care of that for you. That's why men cheat. They cheat because either they don't get a recognition of all they contribute, or they get editing. Why did you move the chair there? Why is this on the floor? That's the editing. Now, you may have picked up the entire house, taken the kid to school, made the breakfast, gotten everybody out of the house while your wife slept. But rather than saying, hey, thanks for taking care of all that today, I really appreciate it, she'll come downstairs and she'll say, why is this here? Who moved my cheese? There's that great book, Who Moved My Cheese, where people in the workplace are agonizing over incredibly stupid, petty things. But this is why men cheat. And this is why men divorce. It's not for sex. It's never for sex. It's for ego, recognition, pride, show me some appreciation. That's why men file for divorce. You and I were talking before about the south of France. And the greatest vacation I ever had was in the south of France with my newlywed, with my newly engaged bride. And we had the best time. Because the great thing about the south of France is the same thing about the great thing about any center city. It's not a city. It is a sprawling seaside resort from one end of the country to the other. The great thing about it is that if you don't want to fish, you don't have to fish. You don't want to tan. You don't want to eat here. Whatever you want to do is a short distance from wherever you are, and it is in its best form. There's a radio station in Monaco called, what is it? It's not Monaco 104. It's something like FM 104, radio for the south of France. It's the only English language station in the south of France. I'm like, that's what you want to own. You want to quit and retire, that's what you want to. And I think I got a friend who owns that or recently owned it. And you know, I'm sure they managed it, nothing disparaging. I'm sure they managed it as a vacation resort that they never planned to sell. They planned to die in. And I don't really want to see those books. I'm sure they're honest as could be, but that doesn't mean I want to see those books. However, wouldn't that be cool to own a radio station, own a business in the south of France, to have a place to go, and then to be, oh, you haven't been to the south of France? There are two towns here that blew me away. One is this resort hanging out over the Mediterranean. It is, I'll think of it in a second. There's the rocks at Eden Rock. There's Eden Rock. That's what it's called, the hotel at Eden Rock. It hangs out over the Mediterranean. And over the Mediterranean, you know that show Below Deck with those yachts on Below Deck? There's always one of those yachts anchored off of the edge of that hotel. You're sitting there in the cafe. It's 72 degrees, always 72 degrees. There's no breeze. It's just this luxurious air that envelops you in wealth. You just feel like you're walking through wealth. And you look out over the Mediterranean, and it's azure blue. It is the most beautiful blue you could imagine. And there's some stunning, amazing rock formations coming out of the water. But there's this below-deck type yacht just sitting there. and your imagination starts to go like, who's on that yacht? What is the life like of a person on that yacht that's nothing like my life? And nobody is in a hurry. We would sit at that cafe. We have photos of it. We would sit at that cafe high on this hill overlooking the Mediterranean in 72-degree weather, and we could have sat there till now, and nobody would have cared. It's the hotel when they have those film festivals in Cannes each year. When they have the film festivals in Cannes, this is where all the big shots stay, at Eden Rock. This is where they stay, that hotel. It's beyond a Gatsby hotel. And then Nice itself, the waterfront at Nice has these spectacular hotels and shops and stores. It's just an incredible experience in the south of France. Personally, even though it may be a little touristy, I liked Monaco the best, because in order to have a lounge chair in Monaco, on the beach in Monaco, all the lounge chairs are owned by restaurants. And you have to make a reservation for the restaurant to get a chair the next day. But then it's your chair. The other town in the south of France is called Eze, E-Z-E. And Eze is this medieval town with the hotels and the homes carved into rocks. It's beautiful, and it is a medieval town. But there's this one restaurant. You make a reservation, you eat it as, you go in there, and they take you to your table, and oh my gosh, I'm sitting at a table on a platform that's hanging out over the town. There's nothing below you. There, it's just this one table that's hanging out over, and it's the most romantic thing. There's the moon, there are the stars, there's this medieval town, and the best food I've ever had in my life in Eze, France. That was spectacular. Gosh, I hope one day you get to go to Eze. If you haven't been to Eze, if you haven't been to the south of France, I hope one day you get to go. It's spectacular. You and I have the best time, don't we? I have a website that explains everything. WalterSterlingShow.com. 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 Every email I get gets answered. I look forward to it. And I will have an amazing story to share with you next week about what should I do about a health condition that I have, and should I tell my kids or not tell my kids? The greatest gift you and I can receive is a request for help.